Portfolio Committee for Public Enterprise session. Today is meeting of this committee, and we will be having and expecting Pinel on the progress update on the implementation of the turnaround strategy. Let me take this opportunity to welcome all honorable members, the ministry, Pinel itself, hope the board and the executive are present here, and the honorable members, as I already alluded to, you all welcome the staff, you all welcome to this meeting. Honorable members, I don't want us to waste any time. Let us quickly go to the secretary to just provide us with the apologies, if there are any. Dusang?
Good morning, Chair and honorable members and the guests. The apologies I've received is for Mr. Kwangwa, and Mr. Kachalia is consulting a doctor this morning. And we've also got received an apology from the minister who is attending cabinet meeting. The delegation that is here with us now, Chair, is led by the Deputy Minister, Deputy Minister Phumulo Masualle, and then the Chief Director, Weekend Bangani, Ms. Gloria Sorobe, the Denel Chairperson, General Temba Matanzima is a board member of Denel, Mr. Tami Magazi is a board member of Denel, Mr. Manga Mnisi is a board member of Denel, Mr. Iphosa Ramano is also present, is a board member of Denel, Ms. T.D. Mukabudi is a board member of Denel, Mr. Mike Kobe is an interim GCEO of Denel, Mr. Ria Saluji is the Chief Restructuring Officer of Denel, and Ms. Tandeka Sabela is the interim GCEO of Denel. That's the delegation, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Tsang. Honorable members, let's again welcome the minister, the deputy minister.
Okay.
And there is somebody who is putting his hand up. Honorable Komani, it's you.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, and colleagues and everybody. I'm noting the apology of Ms. Umphile Maude. She's not well. Thank you very much.
Okay. We'll love honorable members to send their apologies to the Secretary of the Portfolio Committee. All apologies are supposed to go there. It's fine, Honorable Komani. We welcome that. Honorable members, let us welcome the Deputy Minister and his team. And I won't take any other time but to give to the Deputy Minister to give his overview and then hand over to his team to do the presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Greetings to the honorable members. May I just check, Honorable Chair, because it's an apology really, because of the list that has got into the meeting, I do not see the board members, as I was made to believe they will be attending this meeting, unless all of them are seated in one place, which is highly unlikely. Can our team just verify as to the how have they connected to the meeting? At least from my gadget, I don't see them.
DM, through you, Chair, I have just learned now from my colleague, Weekend Bangani, that they are having problems with connectivity, and they are trying to connect now. So if the Chair allows maybe a few minutes time to allow them to connect. Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
I apologize, Chair. I just observed that I do not see them having connected yet. Can we request to the Honourable Committee just a few minutes that they will be connected as it is indicated? My apologies, Chair.
Okay, Deputy Minister. Let us wait. Honourable Members, let's just hold for 5 minutes. We cannot give them more than that. Otherwise, if we exceed 5 minutes, we will be affected on the other side. Let's give them the 5 minutes break while we're waiting for them.
Okay. Buka wacha mabuku kungale program la mikono. Mbukatisa.
CEO that is hobby. I think the rest will then fall, but they are here. So they are here. Thank you, Lebu. Let's see, 5 minutes exactly. And then let's go back to our deputy minister. Honorable minister.
No, thank you very much, Chair. And thanks once again to the honourable members for your indulgence. Apologies. It does appear that there's just been a couple of challenges in respect of either the receipt of the link as well as the power failures in some of the buildings. Apologies again profusely. Chair, we have the board as represented by the chair and the other board members, which I think the chair of the board will introduce them, as well as their executive team. We have really been at pains trying to get Danel to find its feet. You would know, honored members, who had come there, there were serious financial funding constraints that the entity was facing. Where we sit, we do see and hope that from the number of interventions that have since materialized, there is light at the end of the tunnel, even though the difficulties are still there. I think it's a good opportunity that the board is here together with the executive team to take through the portfolio committee on progress in respect of the turnaround plan. Chair, I will not take the space of the board to actually take the committee through this. The board is the accounting authority. I'm happy to have them take the committee into confidence on progress on all matters. Having said that, Chair, with your permission, I will then hand over to the Chair of the board.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let me show my face. I'm trying to show my face just to make sure I'm not a robot. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, and thank you very much, Chairman. We really appreciate the time for you to indulge us as we make this presentation. It is true that there's a bit of problem with the linking. Some of the board members are probably already here as well, but I will see as they come along. But we do have the acting CEO of Danel, Mr. Mike Hobe. We do have the CFO, Thandeka Sabela. We also have the Chief Restructuring Officer, Mr. Ria Saluji. If it is okay with you, Deputy Minister, I will hand over to them to do the presentation. Mine was just to introduce us. Some of my board members will join as well. We're quite keen to be in this meeting. Thank you.
Can we proceed, Chair? It's Mike Kobe.
Yes. Yes, we are waiting for you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. We will share the presentation. Chair, with me, I've got Ria Saluji, who's the Chief Restructuring Officer, as well as Thandeka Sabela, who's the interim CFO. We have shared this presentation, and the Chief Restructuring Officer will take us through the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike, Chairperson and Deputy Minister. It really is an honor for me to be able to present to you the progress that Danel has made in terms of the strategic restructuring process that we've been engaged with over the last four months. Right now, what I am going to present to you is where we are in terms of that strategic restructuring process. And essentially, we are in the implementation phase, but I'll take you through that. But please allow me to, before I proceed with the presentation, just to say that as a Denel executive, we and with the support of the board and the shareholder, we are extremely, extremely positive and thankful for the level of support that has been shown by government, particularly in the midterm budget speech by the Minister of Finance, with the announcement on the recap that was allocated to Denel. And I think that goes a long way to show not only the support for Denel, but to allow us to underpin the strategy and the implementation that I'm going to present to you now. Thanks. So basically, I'm going to take you through the strategic approach, what we have done in terms of aligning the stakeholders with regard to the strategy, where are we, what's the framework, and essentially taking you to what we need to do now in terms of the interventions going forward. So simply put, the strategic approach was, when I got here about 4 months ago, the intention really with the executive and also with the board and the mandate was, we've got to stop the bleeding. I mean, Denel was and still is to a certain extent in a very difficult space at the moment. So we had to stabilize the business. That was the first thing we needed to do. We then had to create the platform on which to sustain the existing business and then to see in the medium to long term how we can grow the business going forward. Now remember, this is not a 5-year, 10-year plan. We said that within the next 18 to 24 months, we must get this business right, because we do not have the luxury of time on our side to sustain the business going forward. So we know where Denel is at the moment, and we know where we want it to be. We want it to be profitable. We want our people to be empowered. We want them to be committed. We want them to have a culture that will allow us to make this a center of excellence once again. We understand the external environment, both in terms of what has happened to Denel over the last few years, but also the impact of COVID. And that was a perfect, perfect storm that just was the last nail in the coffin for Denel in terms of where we needed to go and how are we going to proceed. And we had then to look at the internal environment, the deficiencies within the organization, what was still good, what we needed to change in terms of the bloated footprint that we had, the fat in the business, and our inability to execute our programs on time, on budget. And we said that we needed a clear strategy, but with dynamic leadership to take us to the next point. So in terms of the governance and consultation, and why I think this is very important, is to show that this is not in isolation or being done in a vacuum of the key role players. We have socialized this strategy and the approach with a number of critical instances, okay? Notwithstanding, in the first instance, the board, which has approved the strategy, it has been presented to the minister, the acting DG, the officials, the DPE, and more importantly, at some level, from a customer perspective, we've aligned the Armed Corps Board and the Department of Defense. Not only that, we have now established a joint steering committee between Armed Corps and Denel, chaired by the two chairpersons of the board, to regulate so that our interests, the common interests of Armed Corps, the DOD, and Denel converge in the national interest. And that has been missing for a long time. At least now, the steering committee is meeting once a week to be able to regulate this relationship in the national interest. There's obviously also been an intervention with regard to the restructuring process in terms of starting the 189 process, because the fact of the matter is that the revenue stream that we have at the moment does not justify the amount of cost we've got in the business. So we had to make a significant intervention with regard to how do we cut the cost and the footprint within the organization. And it has been presented to National Treasury officials. It has been presented to all the financial institutions. It has been presented to all the critical stakeholders, including the end user, which is the National Defense Force. And I think for the first time after many years, the Plenary Defense Staff Council, chaired by the chair, the Secretary of Defense and the Chief of the National Defense Force have now all aligned behind Denel with regard to securing the strategic capabilities that are vested within Denel. So I think what is important, we've gone through all of this. We've now signed an MOU between AMSCO and Canal, as I've said, to formalize the relationship so that we are actually able to secure and fund the capabilities, the strategic capabilities that we're talking about, and sovereign capabilities. And I think why that is also very critical, and I think there's alignment, is that this, the null issue of being the custodian of strategic and sovereign capabilities, gives us two things at the national level. The one, it gives us strategic independence that not many countries have. The second thing is that it gives us security of supply. Many countries in the world today do not have strategic independence or security of supply when it comes to defense industrial capability. So you rely on third parties, third countries, and if that security of supply is no longer there, and that's the value proposition up to now, it has a direct impact on our ability to support the National Defense Force in terms of its constitutional mandate. I think the last critical issue that I want to say, on the 26th of October, during the medium-term budget policy statement, that Canal was going to get the recap to the tune of about 5.2 billion rand, of which about 1.2 billion, about 2 billion rand will come from internal interventions. And that, I think, we've, again, I cannot emphasize more about how we have appreciated that intervention so that we can start with the implementation of the turnaround plan. In terms of the financial reporting, in terms of the audited and unaudited statements, and that maybe, Taneka, you just want to say a quick thing before I continue.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Ria. In terms of outstanding financial statements, the 2020 financial statements have been completed already. We have financial year 2021 and 2022.
Sorry. Can I ask you to move with the presentation because you seem to be not moving with the presentation. I think the previous presenter just continued speaking while the presentation was stuck. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We are still on slide five. I'm just giving a report in terms of the outstanding financial statements. As I said, the 2020 financial statements have been finalized in 2021. We have the financial statements outstanding for 2021 and 2022. The plan is to submit unaudited financial statements for audits at the end of this month for 2021, with the expectation and planning that the audit will then be finalized in February 2023. We are then submitting 2022 financial statements at the end of February 2023, and the audit is expected to provisionally be finalized by the May of 2023. We are, however, looking at probably clawing back a little bit on the 2022 financials, but at the moment, we've made a commitment to submit those financials at the end of February. And then, of course, in terms of 2023, we will submit as required for audit at the end of May 2022, with the audit expected to be finalized in September.
So things that we will check now.
Yes, so in terms of the outstanding financials, by the end of the financial year 2022, we'll be on track, having submitted the 2 years that are outstanding and the current year that will be due at the end of the financial year.
So, Chair, just in terms of financial reporting, and that notwithstanding the challenges that we've had, at least now there's been movement and progress towards sorting the financial reporting out in terms of the financial statements. Thanks, Mike. So, Chair, if I may just quickly give you the approach, and behind each one of these phases that we're talking about, because essentially the turnaround and restructuring plan has three phases. I've indicated that the very first phase was to stabilize the business, to stop the bleeding, and then to sustain the business, and then to lay the foundation and a firm platform on which to grow the business. We have, to a large extent, stabilized the business, but again, I have to emphasize that there are no Chinese walls or no distinct separations between the two processes. It is an integrated, continuous turnaround process. And you can see we've depicted in the center that we are in the sustained phase at the moment, but we still have a leg in the stabilized. So we are still have elements of stabilizing the business, but we are securely now moving into sustaining the business. And of course, as I've indicated before, the recap and our own internal interventions to financially support the organization has created a firm base on which to take the business forward. And behind each one of these phases, there's a significant implementation plan, and with a huge amount of detail and actions and plans which support the phases of the approach. So if you say, what are the fundamental and critical success factors and the key objectives of this plan? There are essentially six fundamental objectives, and behind each one of these objectives, as I said, there's a very detailed and meticulously implementable intervention which addresses itself to these objectives. And what are these key critical objectives? The one was we had to reduce the cost and increase the revenue, because it does not matter all the internal interventions we make. If we do not increase the revenue, we will not be able to sustain and grow this business going forward. We've got to have engaged staff who are performance-oriented and who are motivated. I mean, right now, the fact that we were not paying salaries, the fact that they have gone through a very traumatic experience from a financial perspective, we had to then engage the people and say to them, there is possibility of turning the business around. There is light at the end of the tunnel. And that if you move with us together, with the kind of interventions, it will be a painful process and a long road ahead, but we can do this. We can secure a future for all our people in the organization. And we are busy with that process and HR intervention right now. We've got to increase our customer base, because historically, as we know, for many years, we were dependent on the SANDF and the Department of Defense. As the budget started declining, we had to look for revenue streams outside of South Africa to be able to support these capabilities, these strategic capabilities. And because of COVID and all the other internal challenges we had, we lost a huge amount of that customer base outside the country. We are now in the process of reestablishing those strategic relationships so that we can reestablish that pipeline, which we have right now pegged at about, in the region of about 35 billion rand, which we know is there, that we want to go and increase the customer base, the basket of revenue, so we're not dependent on one or two key customers. And of course, one of the other critical challenges we had was the supply chain. Because we did not have enough liquidity and working capital, we could not pay the suppliers within the supply chain. And as a result, it had a direct negative impact on our ability to execute the existing contracts that were there. So we've got to make sure that going forward, we have the supply chain aligned and supportive of our initiatives going forward. The other critical thing, Chair, was that in terms of our ability to execute and business continuity, we had made significant errors with regard to on-time, on-budget production and manufacturing. So our business efficiency processes were not on par with what was expected through our contractual obligations in terms of the milestones that we had to perform for the customer according to our contracts. And as a result, we paid huge amounts of penalties, and that had a devastating effect on our liquidity and our ability to perform financially and to be profitable. The last point that we have to address is how are we going to do this? We cannot do this in isolation of our people, support from government, support from the shareholder and the board, support from the SANDF, but more importantly, to look at smart partnerships. And here we are not looking at SEPs and selling equity with Internel. We're looking at partnerships that allow us three essential elements. The one is access to market. Two is to access to new technology, because we have not been investing in R&D and new technology for a long while now. And third is to see how we can have risk-sharing financial models that will not have the onerous impact that it has had on us in terms of guarantees and down payments and financial support. And as I said, behind each one of these strategic objectives, there's a fundamental deep level of planning that has gone in terms of securing these objectives. And as you can see on the right-hand side, that there's been significant progress in each one of these. I'm not going to go through the exact details of it, but suffice to say that we have made significant progress and strides in implementing and fixing and embedding these objectives within the organization. So if you look at what is the new operating model for Internel in terms of where we want to address our relevance within the market. Historically, we were a very bloated organization, and I'll come back to that. We were six divisions, all working in silos. Each one of those divisions had its own infrastructure, its own financial function, its own HR function, its own IT function, and it created a huge amount of fat within. It was being duplicated across the organization, and that created a huge amount of cost that was unnecessary and had a the negative impact on our financial performance. So we've said that we've got to streamline the business, and not only streamline the business, we've got to make it more efficient from a business efficiency and continuity perspective. So we've now said we're going to move and migrate into a shared services environment where we've cut out a lot of the fat in the organization. There will be common governance processes, common policies, common practices, and common business management systems and IT systems. The management information system is so disparate in the organization, it does not give us the ability to manage this organization effectively and efficiently. So that has to change. And we need to have one interface into the customer environment. We've been talking to the customer from six different perspectives and sending sometimes often wrong messages to the customer and confusing the market. So we've got to make sure that it is coordinated at the central level and that the key strategic messages are consistent with the new strategy going forward. And what we've done is that we've organized ourselves now into what we call capability environments. When we talk to the end users, the customers, whether it's talking to a Minister of Defense, Chief of the Defense Force, Chief of the Army, Navy, you've got to talk to them in a way which addresses their requirements from the dimensions within which they operate as a defense force. And those dimensions are essentially relevant for us in four environments. The one is what we call guided weapons, which was the old missiles business. Now, guided weapons, we've now integrated all the missiles and what we call precision-guided munitions. And this is a value proposition that distinguishes Danel from many different organizations, defense organizations. There are not many countries in the world, actually, that have the technology and the human capital that can give you a missile and guided weapons capability. And here we've got to ring fences, we've got to nurture it, we've got to invest money so that it gives us that cutting edge and competitive advantage. And there's a special effort within this new environment which we call guided weapons. We've also consolidated the landward environment. In the landward environment, we've said that there's three things that distinguishes the landward. It's mobility, it's firepower, and support, okay? And that is what the landward forces, the army, can understand and look forward from an integrated approach. So we put in their infantry weapons, artillery, all our armored vehicles, our turrets, our infantry weapons, and small arms ammunition and medium arms, medium caliber ammunition supply. So it's a one-stop capability that has weapon systems and platforms and systems that address the full spectrum of landward capability. Then we've got the air environment, the air capability, which is in the dimension of course the air environment, where we do all our military MRO, maintenance repair organization, where we support specifically in this instance the Air Force, the Palestinian Air Force, with regard to the Rooivalk helicopter, the Oryx helicopter, and the fixed-wing C-130 transport aircraft. Those are the critical combat capabilities of the Air Force and the Defense Force. If we, as the original equipment manufacturer, had to allow that capability to decline, we would not have been able to support the National Defense Force, and in specific the Air Force, with all the recent contingencies that they had to address. For example, our deployments in the DRC, Republic of Congo, and our deployment in Mozambique, and more specifically in terms of our assistance to the law enforcement agencies and civilian entities during the unrest that took place in July last year and the natural disasters that took place in KwaZulu-Natal recently. Without the support of Danel and funding those capabilities, which is still an ongoing challenge, we would not have been able to support the National Defense Force in their mandate to support the government in these interventions. And then another critical capability on the fourth dimension is what we call integrated systems, where we take very complex, and there are not many companies, not only in this country, but internationally as well, that has what we call an integrated capability. Sorry, just to come back. In the air environment, which is a very strategic capability, our unmanned aerial vehicles, the UAV, in specific the Seeker 200 and 400, that is an aerial platform that historically was sitting in the guided weapons environment, but it is an air platform and we are not optimizing and maximizing its exposure to market and its marketing capabilities. And we have migrated that from the missile environment into the air environment, and we will locate that within the Kempton Park facility so that it has maximum exposure to the market. But Mike will talk a bit more about it when he makes his comments as well. But in the integrated systems environment, we are now the custodian and we are supplying what we call the ground-based air defense system for the South African Defense Force and specifically the South African Air Force and the South African Army. What is critical about this is that from an engineering perspective, we are doing level 4 and level 5 system engineering, which not many companies have the ability to do, integrate complicated weapon systems into one higher order user system that is going to give you an air defense capability to secure the airspace of South Africa. And that is a huge capability that we need to protect and ring-fence. But in addition to that, this is the environment where we are going to diversify into what we call the civil security environment. We have now been engaged with the Minister of Police. We've engaged with the Minister of Home Affairs. We've engaged with our colleagues and counterparts in ESCOM, in Transnet, with the new border management agency of how can we as a state-owned company with all this capability enhance their security applications to secure their facilities, for example, the border control environment, the oil pipelines, the transmission network, and that is, and of course, to supply the police.
Are you still there?
It looks like he's lost, Chairman.
Yeah, can we get... Or they are in the same place?
They are in the same place. Let me call them.
Okay, please. Honorable members, those are the disadvantages of locking in as a group in one place. Though it has its advantages, but the normally this is the major disadvantage. Because if they were not in the same place, one would have intervened and continued.
They are locking in, Chairman. Thanks.
Thank you, ma'am.
Are you still struggling? Oh, you had power outage. Okay. So, okay then. All right.
Okay, I'm just wondering if we couldn't have someone finish the presentation.
The problem, Deputy Minister, they are in the same room, all of the executive. I think the executive is has locked in one place, in one room.
So there's a power outage in the whole building, so they are trying to connect back again.
Okay, let us be patient and wait a bit, honourable members. We apologise for that.
Sorry about that, Chairman. Yes.
Okay.
Let me just...
Chair, try to mute when you are talking to them.
Okay.
Chair, can you hear us now?
We can hear you loud and clear, sir. Continue.
Okay, that's good.
I assume you've got the presentation in front of you.
No.
Yes, we do have.
Okay. So I'm not sure where we got cut off, but I was still talking about the integrated systems. Slide 9.
The presentation disappeared.
Oh, yes. Please reorientate us.
Okay, so if you've got, have you got a hard copy or a soft copy in front of you?
And we do have copies with ourselves.
Okay, so yeah. if you go to slide 9, you will see I was talking about
what the old Danel was looking like and what the new Danel is going to look like. And you can see the six different divisions, each with its own infrastructure, its own support environment. And it was a hugely bloated organization, and it was costing us a huge amount of money to maintain an organization of this size, not only in terms of the size of the infrastructure and the physical property, but also in terms of the duplication that took place in the support environment. So by migrating into the new Danel, the redefined Danel, we are going to cut out a huge amount of the fat in the organization. There'll be more efficient management of the organization, and there'll be more transparency with how the organization is being managed and run on a daily basis. And the accountability of the organization will be in a more streamlined fashion, so that there'll be more accessibility, not only to the executive, but to the board and to the shareholder, of how the organization is being managed. So what are we busy with right now in terms of the new operating model? If you go to slide 10, you'll see on the right-hand side, we have identified the shared services environment from financial environment, HR, supply chain, legal, risk, communications, and IT. And where are we at the moment? We are migrating in terms of the implementation plan that we are progressing with at the moment into a new shared services environment, okay? And of course, all of this is underpinned by the fact that we required the recap to be able to implement this, because of course there's a cost associated with this. Then if you go to the right-hand side, it's actually where we are now physically establishing the new capability areas. And you'll see there's the land, air, integrated system, guided weapons. And for each one of those, you'll see we are in the process of establishing the business area. And I'm not going to go through the specific intervention, but each one has an intervention and a plan to migrate into the new organization. And if you look at right at the bottom of slide 10, it is all underpinned by a business excellence program where we will be able to monitor, evaluate, and test the efficacy and efficiencies with which we've been able to execute the programs that we are busy with at the moment. Included in this is obviously how we're managing our relationship with our strategic shareholders in other companies like RTM and Ansel, where we're also trying to optimize the relationship with them to be able to extract the kind of financial value that we expect to achieve from those relationships. So if you go to slide, so on a daily basis, how have we organized the Danel and the work streams to manage and control very tightly the progress and evaluate and monitor the progress of this new turnaround strategy? We said we've got the shareholder, and there's, I must say, significant support from the shareholder for the turnaround plan. We've got the Danel board of directors who are wholeheartedly behind the plan as well. And we've got the Armscor and Danel Steer Committee on the side, which is overseeing how they can support us to be able to effectively deliver the capabilities to the Defense Force. We've got the Group Executive Committee, which is led by the interim group CEO. And there's the Restructuring Committee that is led by the CRO, that's myself. And there's an Extended Executive Committee. And these are the leadership and management entities that are executing the three critical focus areas. The one is the internal focus area, and if you go through it, you'll see what, and that's the day-to-day running of the business. Most importantly is how do we execute existing contracts on time, on budget, so that we are not losing money, and how are we managing the footprint of the organization so that the cost base is being reduced, how the revenue stream can support that cost base. On the external side is how do we manage and lead and implement the turnaround plan. How do we revive the business development environment so that we can get new revenue streams, new markets, and become relevant in the market, okay? To able to clean up the order book and to make sure that 34, 35 billion rand that we're talking about actually realizes over the next financial reporting period for us in the next 3-year period. How do we manage the stakeholder relationships? How do we reestablish and reposition Danel as a credible organization in the market, okay? So it's a repositioning and branding of the new Danel. How do we manage our financial resources? How do we relate to the financial institutions that will once again hopefully support the new business and turnaround plan
financially, which we've not been able to do in terms of bank guarantees and performance guarantees? And how do we make sure that we are able to secure the critical programs within the National Defense Force, which have been stuck, for example, Hoofesa and Kamas? Those are two cardinal projects that were stalled for a long while. I can say confidently that we have now negotiated and we are waiting for final approval from the Defense Force to kickstart this these two very critical cardinal programs, one on the landward side, one on the air side, so that all the issues that dog these programs will have been addressed so that we can continue delivering these capabilities to the Defense Force. And of course, it's all underpinned by new governance processes, delegations of authority, to be able to effectively manage how we govern and report to the board and the board reporting to the shareholders so that there's complete transparency of how we manage the organization going forward. So in a nutshell, if you look at the helicopter view of where we are, this is what we are busy with at the moment and how we are managing the business right now and going forward. So if we go to the next slide, slide 12, so what is it? The critical strategic intent, and this is what is important about the turnaround plan, is that we have to reduce our dependence on the fiscus and on government, okay? That we've got to maintain the strategic and sovereign capabilities, and we've got to fund them internally from within the now. And that we need to create a solid basis to restructure and right-size this organization to reflect the new revenue streams that we have to, which is a reality. That's what we have to live with. And again, to lay the basis on growing the business going forward, okay? We've got to ensure that we have a significant export revenue stream. Because if we do not secure export revenue, the local revenue will just not allow us to be able to sustain these strategic and sovereign capabilities, okay? We've got to align with the DOD and Arms Corps on these sovereign and agree with them which are the capabilities we need to fund. And in fact, from a parliament and government perspective, we need to also support the DOD in terms of their own budgeting requirements with regard to how do they manage the strategic capabilities and fund. I mean, a typical example of this is that particularly in the air environment, we've got the Royfalk, we've got the Oryx, and we've got the C-130. The diminishing budgets in the Air Force has meant that we cannot support those air platforms in the manner in which will give them operational efficiency and optimum mobility. I mean, if the Air Force doesn't have budget to maintain the Oryx helicopter, we cannot support the Oryx helicopter. We cannot pay our people, and we cannot continue keeping the numbers of people that will allow us to fund and support that capability. So it has a knock-on effect, and it's a threat that affects everything. If we do not get the funding right for the Defense Force, it has a direct knock-on effect on us as well. We've got to make sure that we work with industry for smart partnerships, and we need to make sure that we are starting to create more jobs, not only with internal, but in industry at large. Okay? And we need to leverage our capabilities to make sure that we are also diversifying into other environments. And we've got to ultimately make sure that we are going to create more jobs and retain the critical mass of jobs that we have at the moment. Okay? We are targeting over the next 3 years at least approximately 1,000 people more, and indirect jobs of about 4,000 people, and indirect jobs, which will have a force multiplying effect over the next 3 to 5 years of almost 16,000 jobs. So there is a very clear developmental goal, an economic goal that will contribute to the development of our country as well, with the plan that we have. We've got to make sure we've got long-term strategic partnerships that will entrench and embed our capabilities so that there is not a stop-start process that impacts negatively on our performance and our financial viability. And of course, that has to do with balancing our national interests with our international obligations, okay? By making sure we secure our intellectual property and our capabilities, and we exploit those intellectual properties and capabilities and human capital to further enhance the value proposition and profitability of our organization. So in a nutshell, Che, what are we saying? The now, right now, we've got a new vision. Slide 13. That shows the helicopter view of what we want to do. The new vision, the three-year plan, is to create sustainability, profitability. We've got to increase our revenue. We've got to have more jobs and create more jobs. We have to be efficient center of excellence. And we've got to produce on time, on budget, so that we are not disappointing the clients with regard to our contractual obligation. That is the new denial. And we know we've been there before. We can do it again. We've got to make sure that we've got to have the right management and the leadership to be able to lead the change. We've got to communicate this. We've got to legitimize Denel again in the eyes of our people and the country. We've got to make it a credible organization. And we've got to win the confidence of our stakeholders about this future vision and what we are doing now in a responsible way. And we've got to have buy-in at all levels for this future. And we need to communicate it effectively so that people can understand in its most simplistic way that this is a national resource, a national capability that we've got to be proud of and we've got to maintain and we've got to secure for the future, not only for our country, but specifically in terms of our national defense force, our independence and our sovereignty. And the four instances that we need to address is the customers, of course, the suppliers, our strategic partners, and most importantly of all, it's our people, our employees, to empower them, to create an enabling environment where they have the ability to deliver on this new vision that we're talking about with the support of the board, with the support of the shareholders and government and the public in general. So what are the risks in this whole process? Obviously, we're not naive to think that there are no challenges. We've got to make sure that we've got sufficient funding to complete this restructuring process. And the recap that has been announced by government goes a long way to assisting us to start the process of making this organization viable again. But we do understand that we've got to make sure that we use our own internal resources, our own creativity, our own intervention to be able to fund the process going forward and not just rely on the recap that has come. We've got to stop the brain drain. We've lost a huge amount of critical skills because of non-payment of salaries, because of the demoralization of the organization, and because of more lucrative business and employment opportunities outside of Denel. We've got to see how we can intervene to regain those skills and human capital back into the organization in order to be able to fulfill our obligation. The funding is very critical. We've got to make sure that the work that we have lost we've lost many contracts, significant contracts over the last few years. I mean, a case in point is the Egypt contract. We've lost an 8 billion rand contract because we couldn't put up a performance guarantee or financial guarantee. And those are the kind of things that we need to mitigate. We've got to make sure that we have plans in place that will allow us not to lose business because of our own internal inefficiencies. And of course, we need sufficient working capital to be able to perform on contractual obligations. Simple thing. If we do not have working capital, we cannot commit to buying the materials to kickstart programs. So we've got to manage this organization from a financial perspective, from an efficiency perspective, from a business performance perspective, and a capital perspective. And lastly, and I think very critical, we have to remain relevant within the market. If we do not remain relevant in the market with new technologies, investments in new CapEx, investments into R&D, in business improvement initiatives, if we do not invest in our young people, if we do not invest in our human capital, new HR interventions, we cannot be relevant in the market. And we will become obsolete at some point. So these are the critical risks that we have to attend to. And we can only attend to that if we are all aligned, if we are efficient, we are profitable, we've got new revenue streams, and we're managing the cost base in the organization. So where are we today? And this shows you the critical nature of our, and the precarious nature of our financial situation. And why we've got to make sure that this turnaround strategy and the interventions we are busy with are successful and they work. It's because of what we are going to show you now in terms of where we are at the end of September 2021. And again, I've got to emphasize, without our own internal interventions with the Denel Medical Benefit Trust Fund, which gave us some breathing space, and now the recap that is coming from National Treasury and government, it at least gives us some space within which to effectively implement the new strategy. But let me just stop there to give Tandeka, the CFO, an opportunity to comment on our current financial situation and why we need to move out of this environment if we are to sustain this business as a viable entity going forward.
Thank you, Riyad. Well, in terms of the performance at the end of September 2022, revenue really has been flat. We show a 5% improvement according against the corporate plan, really coming through from non-core activities in our properties division, and leading to a growth loss of minus 77% against the budget. That's really an indication of performance across all of the operations now up to September 2022, indicating non-performance and non-delivery on time to our suppliers, leading to penalties that have been charged on those non-deliveries. It then becomes quite critical, as the CRO has spoken, one of the key actions coming through from the turnaround strategy is making sure that delivery and performance to our clients is critical in order to show improvements on our margins. In terms of operating expenditure, core to what we need to do is obviously reduce our costs. We are showing a negative 241 against the budget percent, really highlighting the structural changes that need to be implemented in this financial year. Whilst in our corporate plan, we have made certain assumptions that will show improvements coming from liquidity being in place within this financial year, allowing us to implement some of these restructuring. And seeing that there's been a delay in that liquidity coming through, of course, we're seeing those costs still being maintained in the current year. And the forecast is that we implement the turnaround plan so that in the new financial year, we then immediately start seeing the gains coming from the implementation of the turnaround. The net profit for the current financial year has shown improvement of 2024. But when you analyze that, really coming from operations, we are showing a net loss. 467. The improvements in the net profit is coming through from the DMBT funds, which have shown in other income windfall, if you like. So it's not really an operational net profit. It's really coming through from the exercise of unlocking cash from the non-core assets. Our liquidity, of course, is still quite strained. Significantly more than the budget, purely because of the assumptions that were made in the budget and when we expect to receive funding, which we did not materialize in time. Really, I think in this financial year, really the critical focus for the remainder of the year is to deal with the structural changes and implement those in this year, at least put in place the building blocks to it, so that in the new financial year we start showing the savings as promised by the turnaround plan. Yes.
Thank you, Tandeka. Chair, I think if I may just then sum up and conclude of where we are at the moment. I mean, it has been extremely welcome in terms of the recap and our own interventions with regard to the DNBT fund. What I do want to emphasize, and I think this is important, is that the whole turnaround strategy is premised on the fact and underpinned by the fact that we need the money to flow from the recap as we require it in order to fulfill the interventions of the plan. So, for example, a simple thing, we've got to make sure that we can pay our suppliers and deal with our legacy debt, because the suppliers won't start a new relationship with us until we have committed to paying off that debt. And we can only do that if the money from the recap flows on time or timeously. So it's very critical that the money from the recap flows according to our plan and the timelines that we have set for ourselves for the implementation of the plan. So we do request, you know, support that there has to be timeous release of the funding allocated to Denel during the midterm budget speech. We've got to make sure that we fast-track and expedite the sale of the non-core assets, where we will realize about just under R1 billion in terms of our commitment to raising our portion of the funding that is required to make the business sustainable going forward again. And, of course, it is very critical that the Department of Defense and other state-owned government entities, such as the police, Home Affairs, and DPE as well, with regard to Transnet and Eskom, that there's enough support for Denel in order to create a diversification in terms of our revenue stream, but also to add value to their own capabilities from a security perspective. So we are in the process of trying to develop relationships with the SAPS, with Transnet, with PRASA, with Eskom, and with Home Affairs to be able to not only generate revenue, but to enhance their own capabilities going forward. So we ask the community to take note of the development around us. I think what is critical is that from an organizational perspective, we have gone to such a depth of despair sometimes that we need to now start making sure that our people who are our main resource and capability and value within the organization, that we again make them passionate, committed. We've got to increase the morale within the organization. We've got to establish and embed a culture of performance. We've got to make sure that we behave in a way and act in a way which is responsible and accountable. And that is so critical that we need to pay and make a special effort and intervention of how we're going to manage our people going forward. And we are busy with that, because without getting the workforce again, our employees, our people motivated and having faith and confidence in a future Denel vision, it's not going to work. We are now busy, lastly, with the budgeting process for the next financial year, 23-24. And hopefully what you have seen now in terms of the financial performance for this year is a lost year. We are accepting it is what it is in terms of our losses. But hopefully from next year onwards, it is a forward-looking budget. And if we do everything correctly, at least from next year, we'll start seeing the fruits of the turnaround plan. And that we will not, hopefully, be going back to the shareholder or to government to say that you've got to bail out to now. If we are going to commit ourselves to implementing the strategy effectively and efficiently. And of course, that will be reflected in the corporate plan that we are busy with at the moment, which will be submitted Sunday.
End of February,
we'll submit the 3-year corporate plan. And that corporate plan is a future forward-looking visionary plan, which will give a perspective on how it is possible to turn this organization around in the national interest and as a strategic capability for our country. Thanks, Chair. I think I'm going to give to Mike to make some concluding remarks, but in a nutshell, with very limited resources, without any external assistance from big consulting companies, we have used our own internal resources, our own internal capabilities to develop this plan, which we believe we have all our employees behind, that we've got a huge amount of buy-in, and we as executive and management are very confident and comfortable that we can. It is an implementable plan. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Riaz. I think in conclusion, Chair, it's just to mention that we have also had the opportunity of the Africa Aerospace and Defence, which has gone a long way in us communicating our message in terms of a redefined Denel, where we've had the opportunity to engage with both our local and international customers. I think on the back of that, we have been encouraged by the engagements that we have received. We have planned over the course of the next few months to be engaging with the international customers that have remained loyal to us, that have indicated a desire to have a normalized relationship with Denel. And that will talk primarily to the opening up the export revenue that we talk about, to say with a declining a local defense budget, we need to have a focus on the export market and grow that side of the business whilst we retain the support to our national defense force. So there will be a lot of work in terms of defining that. And there's a lot of work, as Riaz has said, internally in terms of aligning with our employee base and getting the buy-in from them through roadshows that we are having, going to the employees and talking to them. Going forward, I think the relationship between myself and the CRO has worked well in terms of ensuring that we implement this relationship, or rather implement this turnaround plan and ensure that Denel returns to stability. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, the team. Deputy Minister?
Chair, that's about it, Chair. I think we hand over back to you.
Okay. Thank you so much. I had to give you guys when it comes to time, but because it's Dinel, and Dinel is our current worry, I had to allow you to do everything, to shoot, and to give us everything that is at your disposal, that you think of, that you are doing and not doing, so that the members can be in a position to understand exactly what is happening at Dinel currently, what are the strategies in place in order to turn around the situation. In the light of that, I will give the members to start engaging this report. My first person to shoot is Honorable Kumede. Major.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. It's well articulated. It does open up what perhaps the entity intend doing. Chair, you know, listening to Mr. Riaz doing his presentation, you know, I really appreciated the melody. I so wish that we can just take this presentation, put it down on the ground, and we see it growing. Then everything fits into its perhaps hole or whatever. But the presentation is good. It's only that there is a difference between what you say and what is practically happening. Chair, I will again congratulate them. I think it's an approach that is in fact not very common in terms of the consultation. They were very strategic. I don't think many other departments do what they have done. You know, approaching and negotiate with AMSCO, which in fact has led them to sign a kind of a deal, dealing with the unions, which in fact currently workers, in fact, they need those percentages, as well as the media. Because once you get distorted and the media begin to talk negatively about you, and then you begin to be destroyed, especially with Dinel, who has sort of been trying to get up, but unfortunately fails to do that. The strategic framework touches on some pertinent issues. My worry, not unless I'm confirmed, my worry is it is open-ended. You know, in many of the things that they were saying, they are open-ended. Not unless, because the period is too short. They are talking about 18 months to implement this. I'm not sure whether they will consider this as short, but it was going to be good for us to have a kind of a milestone to say, as we are going to intensify our oversight role, at least we need to go and check, have you achieved this? Where are you? What has caused you not to achieve this and that? So that was going to really help us. But if their target is 18 months, Chair, you remember as well that we will just miss the 18th month, dependent on when the election is in fact taking place. Chair, I was not happy with the right sizing. I wanted to talk that perhaps the cutting was too lean. However, Mr. Riaz says that they removed all the fat. I'm talking lean. he is talking fake. But I will ask him to once again give us a kind of an elucidation whether what he is saying, there are no programs that have been discarded. It's only that programs have been consolidated. Nothing has been lost. Because he says, you know, each and everyone, especially with the infrastructure and the silos, those people were just working separately from other departments. But what they were trying to do now is to consolidate and have, you know, that relation, interrelated kind of a situation among the departments. So I just needed to get that so that I'm sure that it is not the discarding, but it's a consolidation. The only thing that I want to believe could have been interpreted, if ever it's a kind of a situation, is the non-core aspect, which again, my argument is, Denel is not Denel without non-core aspects. Today, it is counted as part of the assets that may uplift Denel. If we can manage to get that 1.8, then it will mean non-core assets would have assisted us to get where we want to go. So in the long run, I'm saying, we need to get a kind of a program that all these spend that is, we are saying that we are cutting, how do we bring back some of them? Because we would have been nourished as Denel, we would have been having all the capacity to handle all other things that in fact we may want to consider this. I've always asked this, but which I realize that it looks as if Denel is too dependent on fiscal. Too dependent. Each time Mr. Reyes talks, yes, he does indicate that yes, it's funding. As well as respect to the fiscal state anyway, if we get money. But it's interesting for me, out of the language that's being spoken, you remember that the former finance minister was saying, transfer no further, no more funding. It looks as if perhaps the minister that's here is a little bit lenient. However, even the money that you are being given, it comes with its stringent, so that you use this money, you must have done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I would request the chair that if possible, the 3.4 allocation, if that is allowed, then at least we be given a sketch to say this is how we intend spending this money. So it gives us, it empowers us to make sure that the money that in fact was given to them at least is guided. We know what to look for, we know what not to look for. So that's the check. I think this one is the thrust of the whole presentation. The sustainability of Denel and perhaps industry. It raises critical issues. I've said that issues are very critical, but it looks as if Denel may not be ready to execute the program if they don't have other sources. Because currently, I'm not sure, perhaps we will expect that we be confirmed, because we are talking three figures here. We talk about it's 12 billion, at times it comes to 30 billion, at times it comes to 35. So that is the pipeline. So it will be good that we be confirmed that currently at this month, what is in the book in terms of pipeline? And do they have any other sources? I've heard him saying that they took it from inside the organization, which is good. But your plan, if you don't have enough resources, it may not be well executed. Then it means we'll go back to the original denial that we are trying to avoid. This one, Chair, he, Mr. Riaz, often mentions the partnership that they would want to get into strategic partnership, Chair, I want to sell to them a proposal which I will expect them to investigate when we next meet. At least they give us a presentation. The PUPs. The PUPs are in fact, others are calling it, it's a public-public partnership. The PUPs are an alternative to public-private partnership. The idea here is when you use private, public, there is more money than because it has got consultations and what. You talk about the people that are making business and they will drain the entity. But if then you opt for the PUP will in fact, because it's a government department working with another government department, at least there is no one that in fact may be expected to pay. If ever there are payments that are expected, it will be the payments that may be understood. It depends as well on how long the program at the time. Risk check. Risks, there is nothing how they will address those risks. Yes, they are very critical. You know, these are some of the things that, in fact, they ought to be part of the presentation. That this is how we do it. For instance, I don't think there is anyone among us who will ever go back to you and ask you about the finances. You have given us deadlines. What you expect in 2022-23, what you expect in 2023-24. So those are all things. We know that Denel has been haunted by quite a number of things. If as a committee, we are not guaranteed that those things that were haunting Denel will be articulately addressed and we give support as members of the committee, that will be perhaps the situation. I'm talking here about the financial management and reporting. You remember that the reporting, even the last two, that will be given to us in February 8. This is what Daniel is saying, that they want to cut all those things and report timelessly and be on time in terms of all happening. The debt. I think apart from saying that the debt is the legacy issue, but it would be interesting that how much is left. We remember that as well, that there was 2.9 that was given to address the situation of debt, but we don't know what is left. Perhaps some in part of 3.4, there will be some money that will go, but it would be interesting to see how much is left, and then in terms of their own internal strategies, they may be in a position to say, if things go according to the expectation, this debt, provided we get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, may be over by this month or year. It depends what they are saying. The payment of staff, yes, there is a mention of that. You remember that we were saved by the medical scheme, that at least we pay them. What is the situation now? That thing must not begin to trigger some of the down tooling and the go slows perhaps within the department. The state capture has infected DNL. Let's talk about that. We really need to know that what strategies do you have in order to transfer this, to address that. We don't have infect elements that infect behave in a state capture behavior. People who are still joining organization with the purpose of looting. So those things as legacy issues, we need to understand them. We need to get a program as what exactly are we doing. If ever there are things that in fact we are assist with, that we will do. We talk here, many of the SOEs are very weak when it comes to consequence management. You know, there are people that cost the entities or organization very much dearly, but management don't even dare and discipline those people. Whether they are friends or what, but the organization will just sink. And other organization may even close up because no one is taking charge of disciplining members. The reputation change, this is very serious. It was spoken, but when it was spoken, we were talking about it was a relationship between AMSCO and DNL. It doesn't end there. It's too much. It goes all the way. You talk to some other people, many of us who are still believing that DNL will never survive. I'll be happy if you prove us wrong. That's why I so wish that we take this presentation, put it in on the ground, we just water it, and we see things growing. You know, that would be great. We cannot have a strategic entity like this, you know, camping and not knowing its direction. But your directions, what you have presented, it gives hope. But even in the past, when they were doing presentations, those presentations were giving hope that yes, eventually or finally, we've got it, we've nipped it in the bud, so things will happen differently. So those are the things that in fact are happening. Chair, I think I've been answered in terms of the implementation plan and the dates and deadlines provided that this is happening. We are looking at 18 as our cutoff date. We are 4 months on implementation. We hope perhaps in another 2 months you may come back to us and give us the roadmap where you find challenges. Let me say this again, this committee, in fact, to some other people that have spoken, but I want to believe that all committee members were very much behind you, DNL, and we support and hope that you won't really let us down. You know, this is like a wedding when you go and marry. You sign vows, do all those things. This is the kind of a relationship we wish to have with you. As a result, we pledge our support for DNL, and we hope that DNL won't really let us down. Good luck to your tough journey. I hope you will succeed. We'll be there behind you. Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you, Honorable Gumede. Honorable Isaac, hope you won't take that time taken by Honorable Gumede. It's not a good example. Honorable Isaac.
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity. Morning, colleagues from DNL. Honorable Gumede has covered quite a bit. So I think he has somewhat also encroached on some questions that I might have wanted to raise, but nevertheless, I'll be brief, Chairperson, as you requested, and I'll give the balance of my time to Honorable Shabalala, who I assume will also be pretty brief. Yes, the slide 15 obviously has summed up the state of the current affairs at Denel, and I'm not going to expand on it. I think it is obviously information that has been known to us as a committee for some time now and to the broader public. Nevertheless, we also perhaps be able just to expand on the sale of the non-core assets. What are these non-core assets, and how much do we guesstimate, or does Denel guesstimate, that they will realize from these sale of non-core assets perhaps within the next 6 to 12 months? Then to be brief again, the issue on the skills loss. This remains a huge concern, of course, for Denel. And with the reputation currently that Denel is enjoying, how confident does Denel see it being able to attract the quality skills as part of the restructuring program that lies ahead? Because I think this is of cardinal importance and key to the success of the organization, that is the quality skills. And then finally, Chairperson, I'd just like to ask, in terms of supply chain, what is roughly Denel's turnaround time in paying suppliers? Because again, you know, with the reputational loss, I think this also is an issue that needs attention. And I'd just like to find out what is the plan in terms of the paying of the suppliers, which remains important to the suppliers to Denel. Chairperson, I'll just stop there for now and perhaps give the others an opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Isaac. Can we go to Honorable Komani?
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation from Denel. I just hope that we ultimately don't get to a statement that says easier said than done, because the presentation looks pretty good. Yes, we accept that, but we need to caution the Denel that much as their presentation would be that good, the implementation of that presentation should also be monitored so that they ultimately get the desired goals in terms of what they planned for. And Chair, one would then ask, because Denel is one of the SOEs that has been really struggling with the payment of salaries. And they have, yes, indicated that in their presentation. But then one would then like to know the status there, whether the payments were all paid, what is the status as was indicated by Honorable Gumede, so that we put up to speed, so that we know we are not caught up by surprise in future. So, and Chair, in terms of the state capture would always rise and rise in all the presentations, but then we don't have any of them speaking of what consequent management is being applied by Denel. Because believe you me, some of the beneficiaries of state capture are still there in the institution. So what is it that is done by Denel to address that? And they spoke to the debt being paid. We need to as well to be taken through into confidence as to how far has they paid the debt, how much is left, and what is the plan then to then cover the outstanding amount. And Chair, I would want to emphasize again on what Honorable Isaac has just alluded to in terms of the skills, because it's a fact, based on the reputation, based on the challenges that Denel has gone through, they have lost skills. What is the status at the moment at Denel what is it that they are doing, what skills they have, and we have got cash skills, and then they have lost. What plan do they have then to get those back in, so that we can see our presentation, our planning, and being executed properly? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Komani. Now we are with you, Honorable Mkwanazi. Shavu. Mkwanazi. Is Mkwanazi still here? Yes, she's here in the platform.
I've been trying to log in another gadget. I'm sorry about that. Chairperson, thank you very much for the presentation. I'm wasting your time, as it's fairly covered by Honorable Kumete, especially on the time frame and the monitoring of the restructuring plan. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Kwanazi. Honorable Butelezi. Is he on the platform? I didn't see him there, though I didn't even hear the apology. Then he is not there. Honorable Samini? Not. I saw you.
I'm here. Morning, colleague. Look. Thanks for the opportunity. I think the presentation must be understood for what it is. It's basically an organizational re-engineering presentation or proposal. Part of what is being said, which does not come out very clear, is the role of government in this re-engineering. I will make an example. Dinel lost out on a potential 8 billion project because there was no money. Yet we have a shareholder, which is our government, which could have easily given those guarantees if we are indeed compatible with the type of talent and capabilities in the human resource that we have. So we need to also understand our role as government as it relates to these SOPs, because I think we somehow allowed ourselves to fall into the trap of this false narrative by the opposition that these SOEs are merely making money from government. Now, the inverse must be asked as a question now. If these SOEs were profitable, what would be the benefit of government in terms of that profitability? If you share risk, you must also be able to share benefit. You must then explain this thing in their context. That's one part. The second part, we seem to be too obsessed somehow with this concept of state capture without necessarily getting into bolts and nuts of the issue. You see, if we are saying there was state capture denied, we must say specifically to this project, this is where state capture happened and how it happened, so that we're able to learn. Let us not use smokes and mirrors and hide behind content. I'm saying this because if you look at how we want to characterize everything as state capture, we might miss important points along the way. If you look at the what is going to be explained in terms of state capture, the general Asia, maybe one needs to ask, is there a market in Asia for Dinel? If there is, then there must have been a reason to establish that wing of Dinel in Asia. Let's not allow greed and opportunism to derail us from a potential market. So if there's state capture, let's isolate state capture from an opportunity so that we're able to separate grass from hay and focus on the opportunities. You see, as we are restructuring the net, ultimately we want it to be as profitable as possible. We've acknowledged through this presentation that, no, look, the market, because in South Africa, largely the market was with the defense force. Now, with the declining budget in the defense force, it means we need to get new market. So how are we going to identify this market? We need to be able to say, this is a market, and how we are going to exploit that market. If the presentation doesn't say anything about exploring opportunities in Africa and ultimately identifying the African Union as a potential market, because there's a lot of instability in Africa and not much work is being done in this space by African countries, I would assume. So how do we, as parliamentarians and government, how do we then assist the NEB penetrate the African market? That's one. Two, the presentation makes a hint on possibly looking at working with the South African police and other departments, which would also include your wildlife, because we have, as part of tourism and whatnot, you have these wildlife people who are game rangers. I think Dine has a role to play there. But how do we then look at policy issues insofar as saying, how does PMFA enable this type of engagement between government and government? If it doesn't, how do we then ensure that it does? Because DINEL as an organization in its inception, it was for the benefit of government departments. So you can't then introduce something that's going to be a hindrance to that. It's self-defeating. Now, when we look at lean downsizing, let's call it downsizing, and core assets and non-core assets, we need to be a bit careful when it comes to that. You see, one game reserve decided to dispose of their non-core assets, and the one thing they let go was cleaning services because it was in their core business. But when they did that, no visitors didn't come because their chalets were not cleaned. So what looks non-core may be very critical. We need to be able to separate that and maybe list what these non-core assets are and how have they been used and why were they there if really we can just get rid of it and still survive. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Dlamini. Honorable Pierre.
Thanks, Chair. Greetings to yourself, colleagues, and delegates that from DINEL. Chair, I'm really covered by my colleagues who spoke before me. But one thing that I want to reiterate is that the presentation itself is good, giving hope, the re-engineering of DINEL and as well as the DINEL Asia. Chair, my question would be that I want to check in terms of the interaction with the other departments. They spoke about having they're going to provide services or be it close to the borderline. What I wanted to check, because we want DINEL to operate and be profitable on its own and be in a position to run according to the way it was made to be at the first place. But, my question would be, when they will be doing, separate from Honorable Samir, in terms of your PFMA, but I want to check because it's part of the profitability and wanted to operate financially on its own. Will it be any profit that they will get from these other departments when they go and assist your MAFES, be it your Eurospace in your SAA and other departments and police? Will they be injecting cash to DINEL so that it can operate properly, or it will be a mutual agreement to say it's government to government? That is the only clarity question that I'll want to venture in, but and to say,
Thank you, Honorable Perry. Honorable Malinga. Honorable Malinga, are you still here, Togo? Oh, Honorable Malinga, oh, are you still here? Malinga? Okay. Honorable Malinga disappeared. Honorable Shabalala, just disappoint the Honorable Isaac. Malinga, I mean Shabalala.
Why are you saying I'm disappointing, Chair?
He was expected to be very long.
Okay, all right. I am going to disappoint him and everybody else. Good morning to the officials, Deputy Minister, and MPs. Firstly, I want to take on where Honorable Shamil left off on the state capture issue. I think I agree with him on the sentiment. Perhaps what we need to be specific to say, the corruption that happened in Dino. So that when we speak to this entity, it must not be state capture, because then it's holistic, it's everything on the basket. So if it's corruption, let us be told where it happened, where's the project, and what are we doing about it. And that's one. Secondly, Chairperson, I want to know, is Dino functioning now? If I can just be told, if Dino is functioning, and if it's functioning, what is it doing every day, day-to-day job? And on that question, if we were to have a serious invasion and war, what would be the response of Dino? Does it have capacity to really protect this country? So, Chairperson, let me just ask one key question. Dino is implementing the 5-year corporate plan. How much will this cost to implement the new plan? When will the funding come from? As you keep on saying, Treasury. If Treasury doesn't come on board, what happens? How far are negotiations with the National Treasury for recapitalization of the company? Lastly, the issue of workers. How far are we with the negotiations, the workers? What is the staff establishment currently? Thank you so much, Chairperson. I hope I made Isaac proud.
Well done, well done.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Members. Thank you, Honorable Shabalala. Thank you. Let's take it back to the Dinel. But I just need to appreciate one thing about this presentation. There was a consistency in terms of everything that is here, they have been mentioned of, but there was a consistency in terms of committing themselves that comes 2023, they will cross the bridge, meaning that there will be an extensive improvement as compared. I am very much appreciating that confidence. However, just small thing, which I think my colleague did ask this particular question, even Honorable Shabalala ended with it, but I just want to rephrase it also as to what extent are you taking all DINEL stakeholders into confidence on the process of implementing this strategy? Are you going all together, including unions, are on board and have the same confidence, the same positive that you are having? Are you sharing all of you? Because sometimes you will have your strategic objective, you are convinced as a board and executive, but the most important people who are supposed to execute your instructions are not with you. That's what I want also to have, is everybody having the same interest that you are having. Secondly, but because this committee had an oversight visit to Dinel, a very important one, our first exposure to Dinel in August 2019. And among the recommendation, after we have listened to an extensive presentation by the previous CEO, there was a recommendation that was made by these members of diversification. Just want to check, to what extent are you trying to consider that recommendation? This country, while we talk, I know this is more to do with weapons, working with police, working with SADF, working with all those, the security and cell body and everybody. But diversification, society evolves, society moves. South Africa has a lot of problems. And one of the major objectives of these entities is transformation of our society, including creating jobs for the poor of this country, which are the majority of this country. That's why I'm very much really worried when the situation in these state-owned entities become very, very negative, because and to extend that, you see people talking about privatization or selling the entity. To me, I don't have, unfortunately, as a chairperson of this committee, I don't have confidence in the private sector when it comes to the commitment to our strategic objective as the African National Congress in terms of transforming this country. Already, in private sector, you will never see the same transformation that is taking place in those these entities. You still have one color that is dominant at the executive level and so on. Therefore, to me, this entity is very crucial for us. We don't want to lose it. But I think there is a necessity to diversify. We still need ambulances in this country, you know, and they are not totally out of this. Is there the consideration of meeting those kind of needs in order to continue with this entity, still as a state-owned entity? It might not be specializing at the end of the day on military-related issues. It might be also linked to us extended to be some wholesalers, to be some other entity, including other entities, so to speak. Thank you. Let me give it to Dinel to respond to our questions. Looking at the time, you don't have the same luxury as before. Thank you. Dinel,
Are you still here? Riaz and Mike, please go ahead. Thank you, Chairman.
The best of my ability also just to group some of the questions together. I think, any strategy is not the paper it's written on if you can't implement it effectively. And I think that has been a key message throughout this whole process, is that the strategy is only as good as how we can implement it. And that is a huge part of our emphasis of where we need to focus our attention. Implementation. And we said, it's not going to be a 5-year open-ended process. It's an 18-month to 3-year process, but by 18 months, we must have made substantial progress in terms of laying the foundation for sustainability and growth. And that is the time. We don't have the luxury of 5, 7, 8 years. So yes, it is not open-ended. We've got very clear time frames on which we want to do this. The conditions in terms of National Treasury, obviously, that is going to affect the way in which we are going to utilize the money and how best to realize the value of the recap. And remember, the recap was based on the fact that we were going to make commitments on specific issues. So definitely the terms and conditions will have to be met, and it is stringent. And if we do not meet those conditions, we will not be able to meet our obligations. In terms of the programs, we have not lost any programs. What we have done is that we've not been able to execute the programs effectively and profitability because of the fact that we've not had liquidity and we've lost certain skills. So we've not lost contracts. Yes, there are one or two that we are in the process of renegotiating. But per se, the issue about the execution of the contract is the crux of the matter. And we are attending to that, and it addresses itself to the retention of the skills as well. Danelle used to be an employer of choice. And if we talk to many people now, they are still saying that they will come back to Danelle as long as we can guarantee them that there is a revenue stream which is attached to specific contracts. And we are relatively comfortable and confident that if we bring more contracts into the business, we will be able to attract the kind of skills that we used to have before. And there is a plan in terms of the database of people that have left the organization, people who are willing to come back. So there is an intervention at an HR level, and we have not yet fully completed that plan, but we're in the process of consolidating that skills retention plan, not only retaining people, but to attract the skills back into the organization. Yes, and we have a plan to ramp up. We've said we have kept critical mass of people. We will, if everything goes well, and I indicated that in the presentation, that there is a load factor of 6 times what we are currently, that it will have a direct effect on our ability to recruit more people and also create jobs within industry. The issue of dependence on the fiscus. If we did not get this recap now, it would have made it impossible to even begin to think of a turnaround plan. So the recap now is laying some basis upon which we can start the rejuvenation of the organization. What we have said internally very clearly, and from the board and the shareholders, and from National Treasury, that we will not get any more funding and support from National Treasury. So this is, in a sense, the last shot, the last attempt, the last intervention. We have to make sure that we create a viable organization going forward. Because in the absence of making this, again, a viable organization, the consequences are dire. Because a government and the country and our people do not have money to, again, bail Danelle out from this situation that we find ourselves. Yes, and the sustainability of Danelle is not only linked to Danelle, it is also in partnership with industry, because the two are inextricably linked. If industry fails, we fail. If we fail, industry fails. With regard to the revenue and the pipeline, yes, we've got the secured order book of 12 billion. When we say secured, those are contracted orders. And we have to execute those orders. Part of the problem is that we've not been able to execute them because of our liquidity crisis. And hopefully now with the recap, we are able to execute on the existing secured contracts. When we talk about the 30 billion rand plus pipeline, that is a pipeline that we know is there. It is funded, but we have not been able to secure those contracts. And that is a huge part of the new task and objectives that we have, is that that is the business that is going to go. We are going to go and look for that business in order to underpin the new turnaround strategy. Do we have enough resources to execute this? We have said very clearly we do not. We've lost a lot of skills. But we have got a very robust and very clear plan of retaining those skills and attracting more skills. And that is what I've just addressed myself. Public-private partnerships, yes, they're important. But our emphasis right now is also in making sure that we do government-to-government businesses, PUPs. And yes, they've got to be profitable. Well, profitable to the extent that it does allow us to maintain our capabilities and our people. We cannot enter into these kind of arrangements where we will continuously lose money, because we end up exactly where we used to be a few years ago, not being able to sustain the business. So there will be a huge emphasis on government-to-government contracts. We have to address issues around PFMA, because right now, there are obviously issues that constrain and limit the way we can contract, but we are addressing that with the shareholder and with Treasury. So yes, there will be a significant emphasis. How do we address the risks? Each of those risks that we've identified, there is a risk register, there is mechanisms. So the issue is really risk mitigation and risk management. We have a very clear process of how we're managing these risks, and that is part of our normal day-to-day process and how we report back to the board and the shareholder. In terms of the debt and what is left, maybe Tandeka, I can just
Yeah, in terms of the debt, as mentioned by an honorable member, yes, we received 2.9 billion rand from the government to relieve the debt. What we have remaining in our books is a note of 100 million, which is due for redemption in September 2023. And the plan will be to deal with that as part of the recap that we have received from the government. That really then deals with the debt that we have in the business. Then in terms of payment of staff, in terms of outstanding salaries, all outstanding salaries have been dealt with. So all employees, both that are still with Denel and those that had left and which we sold salaries to, they have received their outstanding salaries, so that is dealt with. And of course, then we continue to pay salaries at this stage whilst we're implementing the turnaround plan. I think those were the finances that I've identified. I think the last one was around the turnaround time of supplier payments. We have historically have not been great in terms of payments to suppliers. I think the majority our suppliers currently are sitting at over 120 days, and that was part of the ask to deal with the legacy debt in terms of dealing with that. The plan, of course, is that moving forward, we align correctly our receipts to our suppliers to the extent that we can. And our key focus really is our suppliers have not trust in us. So the supply chain process is looking to bring that trust back and finding a modeling with the suppliers in terms of making sure that they are paid on time and allowing us then to deliver to our clients. We recognize that we cannot deliver to our clients without their supplier base. I think those are the finance ones.
Thank you, Tandeka. I mean, in terms of consequence management and how we have dealt with state capture, I think it's at the shareholder level, it's at the board level, it's at government level. And I think we've got robust processes now in terms of governance and issues of intervening with regard to how we manage the processes going forward. And maybe, Mike, you want to add something to that?
No, I think you've covered it, Rias. What we have is an integrated process with the Department of Public Enterprises where we've identified actions from the state capture report that pertain to the NEL. We will manage it, manage turnout. Some DPE will be running with, some are being dealt with the law enforcement agencies.
So thanks, Mike. In terms of leadership and management and the reputation, is it far-reaching? Yes, we made it an absolute point. From the point at which we started this process, we have been engaging on roadshows with every single employee from at the highest level to the lowest level in the organization. We have been on a roadshow communicating at every step where we are, where we're going, what is the implication, both what the negative issues are and what the positive issues are. And it's not only internally. We have been talking to financial institutions. We've been talking to SARS. We've been talking to a whole range of investment organizations, international stakeholders, market companies. So, yes, it has been far-reaching. We have also had, and I think that was a very successful intervention led by the chairperson of the board, that we had an open media day where we presented to the media the turnaround strategy, and that was communicated widely in the press as well in terms of the new strategic approach of Denel. Again, I want to emphasize that we have lost a huge amount of leadership and management skills. We need to make sure that we have the correct mix of skills at leadership level and management level to be able to take us through this process. As I've indicated, that the glue, the golden thread that binds this strategic approach is our ability to implement the strategy. And you can only do that with effective leadership. Yes, and we do appreciate, and we want to thank the committee for pledging their support for Denel as a strategic capability going forward. And please be assured of our commitment to making this, once again, an organization we can be proud of and that is viable and is profitable and that has looked after its people. The sale of non-core assets, the value to Denel, I think we have said that we are going to raise, Pandeka, maybe address How, what's the quantum and the value of this? And it's related specifically to properties and things that don't bear or have a material impact on the strategic capability.
That is correct. We had committed to, as part of our application to National Treasury, that we would raise $1.8 billion. We have raised 992 of that, and the delta of 890 that's remaining is really the sale of of properties, both in the Irene campus and in Cape Town. So predominantly we expect those funds to come from there, as well as really non-core businesses in the engineering space that we thought that doesn't really look in terms or contribute to part of the business moving forward, and it de-risks in terms of any requirements from our local customer as well. So predominantly properties and in the engineering space in currently in Denmark.
So yeah, just to reinforce what Pandek is saying, we've had so much excess infrastructure that wasn't contributing and will not contribute in the future to our core business. And it will only be undertaken if it does not have a material impact on our ability to perform our core objectives and functions. So please be assured that the sale of non-core assets will not have a negative impact on Denel's ability to execute its core functions. Easier said than done, I think we've addressed it. It has to be monitored in the implementation process, and we will regularly report back as we do to the board and the shareholders, back to Parliament to be accountable as to what progress we are making and what are the challenges that will either hamper or what progress we've made in terms of executing the strategy. The payment of salaries, I think Tadeka has addressed that. We have cleared the backlog, and we are going to manage it very tightly so that we do not go back to a situation where we are not in a position to honor our commitment to our employees and our people with regard to the salary payments. The skills loss plan, I think we have addressed that. The time frame, I think we have addressed that. Yes, it is a re-engineering intervention. The role of government is critical, and I think the point that was made is that the issue around government guarantees, around government performance bond, it works two ways. Government will be able to honor and to commit to guarantees and performance bonds if Denel is operating successfully and profitably. You cannot put down guarantees and you cannot put down performance payments, commitments, if you are a loss-making enterprise, because that has a direct negative impact on the fiscal. So yes, if Denel is operating profitably, we're executing profitably, government will more than likely, not more than likely, we are convinced that government will support us financially from the fiscus with regard to guarantees and that. But you can't throw good money at bad money, and that I think is what is important to understand of how this works. The sharing of the benefits, yes, absolutely. If we make money, we're profitable, it has to trickle down to our people. It has to trickle down to our people. We haven't had salary increases for the last 4 weeks, 4 years, 5 years. Of course, that has a direct effect on the morale of our people. If we are profitable, we need to start looking at, again, incentivizing our people. But we can only do that if we get the business back up and running in a profitable way. You know, markets, yes, we've identified certain very specific markets that we want to address. Definitely, we've been engaging with markets in the Middle East. We've been engaging with markets in East Asia. Asia is a specific market for us. Vietnam, Thailand, Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia. Those are specific focus areas for us where we have very specific marketing and business development plans that we are also looking at different regions, geographic regions. Africa is a key footprint for us. In the past, we've not paid enough attention to the African market, and we are having a special intervention of how we can address the African market so that not only do we contribute to our foreign policy, but we can contribute to the economic development and stability of Africa as well through our capabilities and our bilateral and multilateral engagements with governments of Africa and the peoples of Africa. So sure,
South America, yes, historically we've had a long relationship. So there are different geographic regions. Of course, we've got to do it responsibly. We've got to do it within our statutory obligations and national legislation through the NCACC and other mechanisms that control how we manage the defense industry. Other government departments, the wildlife management, absolutely. We've got to protect our natural resources. And part of talking to this, we've also got to go and talk to environmental affairs. We've got to talk to tourism. We've got to explore all the different, the blue oceans economy is a very critical thing. And I think we can play a critical role in those environments as well. And it is all part of our diversification program. Obviously, it will take time to unlock some of these values, but absolutely, we need to contribute and use the now to safeguard our natural resources and our people in a more significant way than what we've been doing, just not being just confined to the defense environment. What is our what are we busy with on a day-to-day basis? If you go to slide. Between the CEO and myself, if you go to slide 11, if you want to know what Janelle is busy with right now, okay, between the responsibilities of the interim CEO and the restructuring committee and myself, that is what we are busy with on a day-to-day basis. Every single day, every week going forward, this is how we are managing the business, and this is how we are spending our time, our energy, and our resources, and our people's time.
Yeah, I think also to add, it's Mike Kobe again, is the in terms of execution of projects, we do have projects currently ongoing for our local defense force, the Air Force, the Army, and the Navy, because we support them also from other parts of the business, as well as export business that we are doing. We are currently executing business to bring export revenue into the country. So there is activity that is currently ongoing in terms of the rest of the employees of Danel. We are currently a staff complement of just under 1,800, and part of the plan is to look at the shared services. To make the organization much much leaner.
Where are you?
I think there was on the issue of working with other agents of state. We mentioned the SAPS and the Border Management Authority and Home Affairs. I think there was a question around the policy issues and whether there is a review. I think in our discussions especially with the SAPS and the Border Management Authority, the one area that we identified that we are talking to our department on is the Treasury Regulation and Supply Chain Management and their need to contract the NEL on a single source basis because of some of the unique capabilities that they have. They see value and benefit in going directly to the NEL, but jointly we will need to resolve the issues of procurement and the compliance to National Treasury Regulation. It's a matter that we are engaging with our department on in terms of how to get the support.
Thank you, Mike. I think just maybe to round off, capacity to protect the country, our responsibility is not mandated in terms of the Constitution to protect the country. It is the responsibility of the National Defense Force in terms of protecting the territorial integrity and sovereignty of our country. Where we play a critical role is we empower and enable the Defense Force to fulfill that mandate. So if we are not profitable, if we do not have enough money to sustain these capabilities, the sovereign and strategic capabilities, like I was saying earlier on, the Oryx, the Rafale, the artillery systems, the weapon systems, the ammunition, whether it's in the DRC, whether it's in Mozambique, whether it's internally in support of the police. If the Defense Force doesn't have enough budget and cannot contract enough to fund these capabilities, it has a direct effect on on our ability to contribute to the defense of our country and of our people. So yes, it is all interlinked and it is intertwined with, it's a symbiotic relationship. If the one works, the other works. And that is how we are part of one ecosystem, and that ecosystem is the defense community of our country. The cost of implementation of this turnaround strategy, we have said that if we receive the recap which we have now, and with our internal interventions, between those two internal interventions, we are going to be in a position to fund the turnaround strategy going forward. And yes, 2023 is a seminal year. It's a point of decision for TNL. If we are not able in the 23-24 budget to execute and implement the strategy and meet our financial targets, then I think we will have failed in our ability to turn TNL around and implement the strategy effectively. In terms of stakeholder management, yes, we have talked to everybody in the organization and to widely across the organization. The critical thing here is the message and to the external environment, is that TNL is legitimate in the eyes of our people. It is credible. It is a sovereign capability. It has to be supported. And it is critical for the defense in support of the National Defense Force. And that is the repositioning strategy, redefining TNL's new role within the current situation that we find ourselves in. Diversification, I think we've talked about the transformation, absolutely. We are 100% committed to transforming this organization, to empowering our people, to have proper succession planning, to proper talent management, to create an enabling environment where our people are proud to serve in this organization. And we've got young talent coming in so that we can secure the future of the new generations coming in. And in the process, creating jobs in the organization to contribute to the developmental state and the economy of our country. Absolutely. Those are issues which must underpin the philosophy that must drive this organization, is underpinned by our commitment to the development of our country going forward. So, Chair, I hope with those responses that we have addressed, the issues that are pertinent. Be assured of the management and executive commitment. We've got one chance, and we've said to the board and we've said to the shareholders, that if we as management and executive are not committed to this process, if we do not get the support of government or the board or the shareholder, which we are, we will not be in a position to do this. But we are confident that with the support and the alignment that is there at the moment, that we have the possibility. Obviously, if there are negative influences that are going to impede our ability to implement this process, if there are instances which do not see the progress and the future of TNL in a positive way, it will have a negative impact. But we will mitigate and militate against any kind of challenges that we have. And we've got risk management processes in place. But please be assured of our commitment. We are passionate about this. We are confident that we can do this. And we have started on the right road. It's a long journey, but I think we started on the right road with the support of government and Treasury, of the board and the shareholder, and yourselves, of course, pledging your support. And we would welcome a next oversight visit so we can show you the progress that we have made in implementing the turnaround strategy. Thank you, Chair. I think maybe, I don't know, Mike, if you want to say a last few words.
No, I think you've covered it. I think we have noted where there's a need to report on progress on some of the actions that were previously identified. And I think in the next engagement, we will touch on those aspects of progress. Thank you.
Thank you, Interim CEO and the CRO, Chief Restructuring Officer, Mr. Riaz Saluzi. And we appreciate that you came back to TNL. You are a former CEO of TNL. Honorable members, let me start going to the Deputy Minister. If he has any closing remarks.
No, Chair, except to say, Libevilemos, to hold them to that commitment. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Oh, thank you, Deputy Minister. Honorable members, I think that was the presentation and the response to our questions as the committee members. And once again, to the board and the executive, we appreciate this positive presentation after for a long time from DINEL, and we hope that come 2022 financial year, there will be a massive improvement in terms of the financial muscle and the governance at the at DINEL. Honorable members, I think let's thank DINEL and the board, including the Deputy Minister, and ask them to leave so that we can be in a position to finish our agenda. Thank you so much.
To the committee, thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Chairman. Okay. Honorable members, I think now we are in the last part of our agenda. The presentation of the minutes of the previous session. Secretary, can you take us through?
Yes, Chair. The minutes of last week, Chairperson, it was the minutes of where the committee received the legal advice from the Parliamentary Legal Services on how Parliament can exercise oversight over the business rescue process and the legislation to the business rescue process and the liquidation processes. Also, a legal opinion relating to the legislative framework that prohibits state organs from collaborating and doing business as public-public partners for the public good. The minutes on the 9th of November 2022, and those are members of who present in the meeting. The presentation by the legal service was done by Advocate Frank Jenkins. And just a synopsis of what the legal service was all about, the legal advice was about, which was to how Parliament can exercise oversight over business rescue process, the legislation relating to business rescue and regulation processes, the legislative framework that prohibits state organs from collaborating, and also what is it that is contained within the legal advice, but not in explicit form. And then the outcomes is that the committee, they welcome that legal advice and appreciate the engagement, which would enable the committee to address the legislative impediments, which are in the success of SOCs. The committee further recommended that there is a need for regular discussions on policy issues, whether legal services. And the committee further noted that the National Treasury regulations and the notes needed to be interrogated if they are inconsistent with the Constitution. Yeah, those were basically the issues that emerged from that meeting, Chair.
Okay. Honorable members, is there any mover to adopt the minutes?
I'll move for the adoption, Chair.
Yes, Honorable Dlamini, move for adoption. Second. Any second, Honorable members?
Mkwana has a second.
Thank you, Honorable Mkwana has a second. Thank you so much. The meeting has been adopted. Tisang, is there any other thing?
No, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable members, thank you for attending this session. Your participation is is highly appreciated. The meeting tend to be adjourned. Thank you.